This is the Growth and Greatness e-commerce podcast, powered by Right Hook Digital, with your hosts, Scott Seward and Raymond Johnston. If you're an e-commerce brand founder, entrepreneur, or marketer looking to accelerate profitable growth for your business, then listen in, because this is the podcast for you.
Welcome back to the Growth and Greatness e-commerce podcast. First one of the year for me. Ray's already kicked us off with a bit of a Black Friday review with some of our team. But Ray, welcome back, man. It's good to get started and jumping into a topic that we haven't really dived into on the podcast so far. So very, very keen to dive in today.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Man, I'm really excited about this one. So we have with us Drew Himmel. Drew, he is a CRO expert, and that's the topic that me and you talk about all the time with our team. So Drew, welcome.
Yeah, really excited to be here. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Yeah, great. Thanks for joining us. Let's just get started. Give us a bit of background about yourself, intro, and how you got into the web design and CRO field.
Yeah, man, so I've been at it forever, 14 and a half years. So I was in finance for all of them, you know, about a year, and I realized didn't want to do that anymore. And so taught myself web design and read SEO for Dummies and quote unquote launched an agency. It was just me working out of my living room for a little while. But we were just selling, honestly, like local service contractors for years, you know, your plumbers, your air conditioning contractors. And then I think, and we were full service, and I think I was stressed, miserable, not providing the value that I wanted, kind of jack of all trades, master of none, and came across HubSpot actually about 10 years ago, and all things kind of like click for me where it's like, oh, we can focus more on own audience and the things that we have control versus waiting on what the algorithm update was going to be from Google or the changes with Facebook on, you know, kind of the paid side. And really went hard in the paint on, you know, lead nurturing, lead, you know, kind of marketing automation, landing page optimization, things like that for a number of years. And, you know, really catapulted the agency to be able to work with some really fun brands like Home Depot and the Chargers, the NFL team, NBA, Lyft. And then, about 2.5 years ago, we started dabbling a little bit in e-commerce because it was just a natural extension for a lot of the work we were doing with HubSpot. And then COVID hit. And honestly, I think it was right time, right place a little bit for us from a business standpoint with so much business migrating more and more online. And that was 5% of our business. Now it's about 70%. Our focus is CRO and email and retention. So we work with brands usually in that 5 to as high as about 75 million a year in revenue, growing really fast, have spent a lot of time on their product market fit, but they haven't really looked internally on ways that they could improve profitability across all their channels by CRO and email marketing. So we're a Klaviyo Platinum partner, do a lot of work with them. But yeah, it's been an incredible ride. We work with some fun brands like Mudwater, the coffee alternative to Vive Organic, which is like the juice shop company.
Ray's ears just pricked up. He's quick to drink coffee and he's searching for the next best thing.
Oh, well, Mud's amazing. It's got like 1/7 the amount of caffeine with, you know, a ton of adaptogens, and it was one SKU, and they ended up doing like close to about 70 million last year off of one product. They just launched their second one, Rest, for help with like sleep and stuff.
Their
like
ads too, are so amazing. I've been stalking them for a year. Their YouTube ads. I know we're not here to talk about YouTube, but their YouTube ads are fantastic.
Yeah, no, they Shane, the founder, is like just an unbelievable product guy and brand, and so makes our job really easy to just. They are really good at the bringing people in the funnel. And then our job is to make sure that they convert as much as possible, you know, kind of all the way through.
So can I, you brought Mudwater. I'm literally using it right now downstairs. I had a cup this morning.
Oh, that's amazing.
Okay. So you're doing the retention. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We're not talking about, we'll get to CRO, but I'm really curious. So, all right. So I thought, because I just went through the funnel myself. And there's a few key points I thought were amazingly fantastic. And I want to ask like your strategy behind it. So for example, once I placed an order, one of the first things I got was that I literally had the question in my mind. I ordered it and I thought, okay, now how the heck do I make this thing? I got an email and text message about recipes. It was order confirmation with recipes. And then the second thing I got was, I think leading to the order is I got another reminder about the recipes. And I thought that was fantastic because it was the first time in my life where I literally had a thought in my head about it. And then next thing I know, I get an answer to that question.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, thank you. I mean, that was a lot of our, so we got engaged with them about 6 months ago. And yeah, they were incredible at the acquisition, product, everything else, but they hadn't really spent the time on retention. So they engaged us. They had, I think, 8 different technologies speaking to the customer, and they were treating everybody the same. Person that bought the product for 3 years every single month to the person that has never tried it before, saw one of their ads and wanted to experiment. So we did a full analysis on the technology stack. We introduced probably like, I think it's now about 25 new flows and segmentations within to really, to what you just talked about of like every touch point between the brand and the customer, figuring out ways to address any challenges, obstacles, things like that. And we used a lot of like qualitative data from like surveys and things like that of like, why did people drop off? Why did people, you know, not repurchase? And then use Klaviyo and Recharge, their subscription management tool, to consolidate all of that and then, you know, kind of build it out. And so we continually are adding new flows, new segmentations, new ways to communicate with the customer. And yeah, churn's gone down by 20%. They've added hundreds of thousands of dollars in new revenue just through these, you know, kind of basic flows. But yeah, it's cool that you've had the hands-on experience, because if you would have tried it 6 months ago, it would have been significantly different, you know, kind of experience.
One thing I loved was the human touch. So once I made that order, I got to the order confirmation, had the recipes there as well as the reminder about the recipes. But also what it had was had a video touch from, I think, the lady who heads up customer success, something like that.
Yeah.
Just a really great page. And it's funny because me and Scott, I don't know, for what, 4 years, part of our strategy on the paid acquisition side is after someone purchases, we actually run a thank you video to people that purchased in the most recent few days and always has really high return. And so I was really happy to see that you guys had that really warm experience. And like, if you have a question, reach out to us. And the copy was just really fun as well. So yeah, just kudos for whoever made that.
Yeah, like I said, it's a home run for us because they're so good at brand. They understand their customer really, really well. So they tone of voice, copy, the videos, like everything from Shane. Shane is as authentic as they come in terms of like a founder that's really passionate about these things. And so we just had all these great assets to work with. And then, you know, a lot of what you're experiencing that through is Malomo, which is that post-purchase that helps like kind of beautify the design of the order confirmation. Instead of getting this like Shopify, like really stale kind of HTML email, we were able to enhance that, have the videos, have the recipes and everything else. And so that's actually one of the top performing flows in terms of obviously open and engagement, but revenue as well. So people might purchase the coffee creamer or some of the accessories, and it unequivocally demonstrates the lifetime value increases by really getting ahead of that once the order has already been, you know, kind of taken place. So
yeah, that approach has always made so much sense to me. And going back to when Ray and I were talking about this years ago when we started doing the thank you video, and it always works better with the founder doing it as opposed to just like a video or an image or something like that. Because I always thought it'd be great to be able to extrapolate that throughout the whole retention process. Once you've had that positive experience, that thank you, no ask or anything like that, but then, okay, down the path, if the founder or whoever's, you know, representing the company is likable and personable, you'd almost have like mini infomercials with the person selling it as opposed to it being in text or a video or whatnot. I think it's something that's really, really underutilized. So it's cool to hear you guys making some really good progress on that.
Yeah. And it's simplifying it. Like when we first engaged, they have like long, long emails. I mean, like 18 calls to action. There's so much content. We're like, all right, let's like simplify. What are the one or two things you're trying to accomplish? And then, you know, we can send more based on the funnel and the journey. But so we also did that just to kind of like when first, you know, just like you talked about, Ray, where it was like when you first got it, like, what are the recipes? That was a common question asked through their CS team. And so we were able to get ahead of that, you know. And so there's little things on like those different touch points that we can help, you know, kind of address, you know, kind of through just a little bit of like data, a little bit of insight, you know, kind of across the board.
One thing I thought was really cool, sorry, I'm nerding out by this because it's so much fun, is the marketer in me, the first thing I do is I start clicking on all the buttons, I cancel my subscription just to see what happens. I'm really curious to see what happens. So I go to cancel it, and it's got probably has the most exhaustive survey of why I want to cancel my subscription I've ever seen. Everything you can think of is there. Or they just don't want it anymore, just don't like the taste, like all these different reasons. Yeah. What I thought was really cool is as I went all the way through it almost, then at the last moment before I went to cancel, it gave me a really great offer to keep me to stay. And I thought that was really great. And I'm not sure if that's a recharge application that they do on recharge, but I thought it was really great. And so so whoever incorporated that, why I loved it is because you guys, I think it was a really great offer to where you're going to give me like a really great bundle for like an incredible deal, like the creamer, as well as the mud water, as well as like another mixer or something like that. Just a really great offer. I'm like, man, like that, if I was going to cancel, that would probably convince me to stay otherwise.
Yeah. And also too, it's a little counterintuitive, but so Recharge does collect all that data. We use that to inform some of the new flows and segmentations, but also too, we launched Recharge SMS because the second and third most reason for why they canceled was they just weren't drinking it as much as the subscription were coming in. And so with Recharge, with SMS, we give you a notification now saying, hey, your shipment's about to be fulfilled. Would you like to pause, delay, or gift? And even cancel. And we make it pretty easy even through like a simple text, because we do notice that if they at least have that ability and they're not worried about locked into like a 12-month, I'm going to have like boxes and boxes of mud water sitting on my shelf and not using it, you can at least, you know, have that ability to pause or delay or, you know, kind of even gift it if need be, or just cancel, you know, still altogether. So that has been shown to increase LTV by 20-30% just by giving them that, you know, kind of option and making it really easy versus like, you know, the gym memberships where they like make you fax in your cancellation with your
it's like Wall Street Journal or something like that. They basically make you call them to be able to cancel it. And it's just, you're never coming back when you've had an experience. I might just be wanting to pause it for whatever reason, but if you're making it difficult for me, I ain't coming back. Like it's not a good experience for anyone. No, let's pivot it back to the CRO side for a second. I'm really curious as to, because you said, you know, 2020 was a big changing point for you guys in terms of pivoting more towards e-com. And it was probably the biggest year in e-commerce we've seen. We know that like COVID hit, online sales just went bananas for a period there. With the shifts in 2021 from tracking and attribution, paid traffic not seemingly performing as well generally across the board, did you see a change in people's focus towards CRO as looking at alternatives to how they can increase ROI again?
Yeah, no. I mean, it kind of coincided twofold for us. One, I brought in an incredible head of UX. She was at Victoria's Secret for a decade. So she was running, you know, thousands of experiments and seeing, you know, tons of products and a lot of, you know, revenue for the company. And so she kind of came on board, and it just added another like, you know, kind of arrow for us in terms of like what we were equipped with. And then two, what was happening was a lot of these like iOS updates and things like that, where people were starting to be like the heyday of, you know, having, you know, the crazy valuations and throwing a ton of money at Facebook at a CAC that was like, you know, pretty easy to do. They had to start looking a little bit more inward. It was like, all right, what's going on here? And so for us, a lot of times we'll have brands that are hemorrhaging, that are like 90% of our business or 80% or even 50% was coming through Facebook ads. And now we've just been absolutely crushed, but we can't even make heads or tails. Like, we're not going to just completely go away from that as an advertising medium, but we can't sustain it. And so a lot of times we would be able to like look at, you know, Google Analytics has so much data, it's great, but most people can only go to like one level deep. Like, we're able to go, we have a data analyst that's able to go 3, 4, 5 levels deep and not just look at like cumulative like bounce rate or cumulative like conversion rate, but like separate it by new versus returning mobile desktop. What is the traffic source? Like, where is the entry? You know, what's the first page they're looking at? What is the last page before they make that purchase? And I think it allowed a lot of marketers and brand owners to just sleep a little bit easier, knowing that they at least have ascertain what the problem is, and then a little bit of like what the solution is to be able to address that. So I think we just found ourselves in a right place, right time, where I think a lot of people are focusing on, you know, paid and acquisition. We were like, we're not going to touch that. That's not in our wheelhouse. We're going to focus on your site and that, you know, kind of digital experience that you have control, like the digital storefront, you know, with email and SMS tied into the website. And I think it just it was great. Like we can look at your average order value, how much traffic you're getting, and your conversion rate, and say if we could just increase this by 0.5%, this could result in like hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in revenue, depending on the brand, just by some small tweaks. And it's going to help your SEO, your paid efforts, kind of across the board too. So yeah, that was a big, big uptick for us, where it was kind of like neglected. I think a lot of CRO brands knew about it, but they didn't really spend any time, energy, or budget towards it. But getting kind of like all these body punches from Apple and Facebook, they kind of had to start to figure out, you know, more creative ways and profitable ways to sustain and grow the
balance.
Business.
The balance there got lost when Facebook was so easy, because that just became the focal point, and there was just complete neglect to the back end. And that was when there were times where it was a struggle. You know, that was probably a frustration now, because we can only control so much when we're focusing on paid, like pre-click, creative, what's happening within the ad account. But if the bottlenecks and the issues are post-click on the website, and the founders aren't focused on that or understanding it or willing to invest in it, like, it's at least 50% of the equation is what happens after we drive traffic. And I think that definitely got lost. And the same with retention. And I think, you know, we go back to the start of last year, and the question when all the Apple stuff started rolling out, the question we were asking ourselves, what's not going to change? And that was email, CRO. These backend elements are all the ones that need. They're going to become much more important going forward with the restrictions and challenges on the paid traffic side.
Yeah, I think we're a lot of times the performance marketing agencies, like, best friend, and a lot, you know, we work really hand in hand. And if anything, you know, they give us the creative, they let us know what's going on in the campaigns, and we can help inform what's working, what's not. But you also get the inverse of it, where, you know, Black Friday or whatever, everyone's kind of like taking credit. It's the merchandiser saying, oh, you know, it's because of the product, and it's the performance marketer saying, no, it's the creative. And then it's like, it might be the web guy saying, oh, no, I built this beautiful site. And, you know, I think it's hard to ascertain when you're running like such deep discounts. Like we had a big engagement with Fathead. They had like the big stickers and decals you'd put on the walls like a kid. And they were notoriously like a discount, you know, they would make up and be like, National Flag Day, we're going to run a BOGO, you know, it didn't really matter. And we started to do some analysis and realized like it was actually hurting the brand's bottom line pretty significantly and the brand equity, and went away from doing only like one, maybe two discounts the entire year without, you know, a huge drop in terms of revenue. But they were so scared to do it because they had 10 years of just discounting. We were able to do a little bit of an analysis and say, okay, like, let's just run some experimentation and kind of see. And it saved them so much money by not giving that away. And then if you factor in, you know, RMA with like returns and things like that, like it's very difficult to run a profitable business unless you can really do that, you know, kind of comprehensive analysis.
I have a question for you, Drew, on that topic. So we work with a lot of fashion brands. It's not all everything that we work with, but a significant amount. And some of them, once they get to a certain size, they feel like they always have to, they rely too heavily on discounts, I tend to find. And so I'd love to hear on that topic, like, how would you recommend brands challenge that philosophy of discounting too often and running promotions too often?
Yeah, it's a challenging one. And I think it has to be very multifaceted, because again, the CEO of Fathead, I give him a lot of credit, like at least had the conviction to try it, knowing that it could have a pretty significant impact on, you know, the business. And again, depending on who's in control, a lot of times the marketers want to continue to run those discounts because they're responsible for hitting gross revenue, but not maybe looking at profitability. And so I think first and foremost, you have to get buy-in from leadership of like, look, this is going to be an experiment. Here are the things that could possibly go wrong. And then, you know, what we try and do is mitigate that risk as much as possible. And so when we're running, you know, like Google Optimize or any kind of like A/B testing, we can run it, you know, side by side with discount, with not, based on different audiences, being able to kind of experiment with that. And are there other things that you could do? Because even like free shipping gets thrown around a lot and you don't think about the impact. But a lot of times we'll be like, hey, do that, but maybe introduce like a minimum. Otherwise, like you're again, it's just crazy, but a lot of brands aren't focusing on bottom line. They're just like, we have to hit this growth. We have to hit this. So I think if you can get leadership to buy in, run like very isolated experiments. Don't do it probably, you know, during Black Friday or during, you know, your busiest months or busiest days. But think about things if they're pushing for that. Is there another way to be able to run it and do it in a way that is a little more creative? Maybe it is that free shipping on $100 order, or also a great one is some sort of like $5 to $10 gift that you can kind of have. That way you can kind of bundle that in as, you know, kind of the upsell. So there are like experiments that you can run, and then you just got to have the right team, I think, in place. You have a little bit of data analysts, you have, you know, whether it be a A/B Tasty or, you know, Dynamic Yield or Optimizely, or even just we use Google Optimize a ton just because it's free. And, you know, as long as you're not trying to run like 8 or 10 multivariate experiments, if you're just running like 5 or 6 A/B, it gets you to everything that you want to try and accomplish.
So I always like, the free gift part, because I think you can just add so much more perceived value, right? Like even retail value is a $20 gift, but it might cost you $5. Yep. As opposed to free shipping, well, in Australia, because it's expensive as hell, it's like $13 for an order. So, you know, I think you can add a lot more perceived value with those other offers and stand out a little bit more as opposed to just the standard stuff. I mean, there's no point in giving away things if it's, as you said, you're just killing your margins and you're driving yourself backwards.
Yeah. A lot of times, too, they're just like, well, it's how we've always done it, you know, and there's not anybody there to like challenge that. And so that's what we first kind of like start with, like, can we, what leeway do we have to be able to run some of these experiments? And some of them just say, hey, you know, we've done it this way, we're always well, go and improve on all these other things. And, you know, that's the hand you're dealt, you have to deal with it. But
so with those, with discounting too often, for example, you've probably seen everything under the sun. So what are some of the other big mistakes you'd often see e-commerce make?
Yeah, I mean, I do see a lot of just not even focusing on the website and in a way where, I'd say first it starts with just like even accurate reporting. Like the troubleshooting that we do in Google Analytics from what Facebook is reporting and what Shopify is reporting is always an incredible, you know, kind of mixed bag. And so we have one partner that we always recommend called Elevar. They help, you know, kind of centralize a lot of the errors, the troubleshooting, getting the data accuracy to 95% or more. And so I think that is incredibly important, because if you have inaccurate data to inform a lot of these decisions, you're kind of swimming up creep, you know, without a paddle. And so for us, that's first and foremost. I'd say 90% of the time just have to go through and clean that up. They don't have the right tagging and all that stuff. And then two, once you have that, the website, I think everyone just looks at it as like pretty and flashy versus like what's functional. And so, you know, they might look at conversion, but again, if you're running discounts all the time, that is going to have a pretty healthy impact on, you know, kind of conversion. So they have to be able to look at it comprehensively of like the whole picture of like, is this profitable? Is this sustainable around CAC and lifetime value and things of that nature? And I find a lot of people don't look at it in the way that they have. So that's like business, you know, kind of decisions and strategy. And then I think on the site, I don't know, this gets lost, but like, you know, again, you're dealing with people with an attention span of a second grader, you know, reading level of a fourth grader, you know, it's amazing if you just go through it. And I always try and do this when we're dealing in the sales process of like, just to buy something and how hard that is, you know, a lot of times. And so some easy ways to be able to mitigate that are what we found on like homepages, because again, some might be a new customer, some might be they've bought 10 things from you, they know where everything is, just make it really easy. So simple things of like the add to cart right on the homepage versus making them click, go to the product page and then add a cart. That's like one step. It seems kind of small, but you would be amazed at how often we come across that, even for very large, you know, kind of brands that feel like they've you know, they spent the 150K on the Shopify site. It's got all the bells and whistles. So, you know, reducing that friction as much as possible, trying to simplify, go through. The power of search is incredible. Even with like brands that we work with that have like 5 or 10 SKUs, they're like, nobody's searching. I mean, Vive Organic has 5 SKUs, you know, little shot company. But what we found is people were searching and they couldn't find it because they didn't have the search bar. So we introduced that, and it, people might search by ingredients or by their state. I want to battle immunity or fatigue or have more focus, or I'm looking for turmeric or cordyceps or whatever it may be. Search is often the highest traffic page on the site, or most used kind of like feature, and it can 3 to 5x conversion over any other page on the site. So like highly recommend like that. People just kind of don't focus on that, and they don't make it then very prominent on the site. It might just be like the little magnifying glass. I just don't like
so much to learn in there from a marketing and product standpoint as well. Because I remember when I had my brand, I had the same thing. So I sold towels. I had a bunch of people coming in and searching, and the highest search thing was pineapples, like pineapple towels. And I had no pineapple towels. I'm like, shit, I could do a pineapple towel. There's loads in the search keywords on your website that you could really learn about the product or how you're going to position something.
Yeah, no, we're huge advocates for it, and the filters and the facets and being able to like sort kind of like properly and things like that too, I think are incredibly important. And yeah, it does inform like product strategy. And we'll, if they don't have it already, we'll get that from the CX team of like, what are the common questions or obstacles or things like that. And that really does help inform a little bit of the user experience on the site too. And so those are some like just big ones that we see on the CRO side that they haven't. And then it's like little things of like, you have I hate rotating banners, you know, the carousel, because it's like, oh, I'm ready to add it to my cart. Wait, it changed. What's the next thing? I mean, you're implementing distractions when you unnecessarily, like it's preventing them from doing the thing that you want them to do, which is purchase the product. And so there's a lot of like just little things that we've kind of like noticed over time that is almost like a boilerplate that we're, you know, recommending. Sticky add to cart on mobile, on the product page. Please put it on all your product pages, because we've noticed that it'll increase conversion by 0.5% just by adding that one feature. It takes 10 minutes of development time. So that's another just like low hanging fruit out of the gate that a lot of brands, you know, forget. And then I'd say the last one of just asking for the upsell in the checkout process is just it's so surprising how many brands just, you know, add the product, check out without mentioning, you know, kind of cross-sell, upsell, you know, kind of opportunities. If you don't ask, it's never going to happen. But we see average order value increase by 15-20% just by adding those elements. If it's at least there, they're already in that buy mentality, ready to check out. Being able to quickly add something to the cart.
Do you do that pre-purchase or post-purchase as a one-click upsell?
Both. Okay. So the pre-purchase and like kind of the hamburger kind of like mini cart, have it right down below, have it on the product page, and then even the post-purchase too. Post-purchase depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Do you want some survey data and use like an Inquire Labs to understand, you know, some qualitative stuff, which is really helpful? Or you could have, you know, kind of a post-purchase as like an upsell as well.
Drew, in what scenario do you recommend that a brand just redo their website versus going through many split tests?
I'm usually an advocate of holding off on the redesign, the replatform, you know, kind of everything. And like, let's do some experiments first and have some data to kind of inform these decisions. The times that we've gone against that, one client was a cosmetic brand. They had like 65 scripts running on the site. They had old product pages, orphan pages that, you know, they didn't even know how to get to and be able to. So the theme was like really outdated and the site speed was like 15 seconds to load. So it's just like a bunch of factors where I'm like, let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's do a retheme. Let's, you know, kind of upgrade. Let's do it, you know, kind of fresh. And so there's situations like that where I'm an advocate for, or if it is like, you know, I'm just a big believer in Shopify. If they're on Magento, WooCommerce, and, you know, they don't have like the Shopify app ecosystem and being able to utilize that in the right way. We had another was a granola, buckwheat granola. She visited Australia and then started this and it's doing really, really well. But they couldn't take advantage of like Fast and some of these marketplaces that were Shopify enabled. They wouldn't work with WooCommerce at all. And so she had all these like opportunities for these like third party marketplaces, but only if she had Shopify. So we, you know, just we're going through that, you know, kind of retheme migration from Woo over to Shopify as well. So I'd say platform. And then, you know, some of these other things are on like site speed scripts, you know, kind of where it's just like, it's too much work to try and, you know, put duct tape on it and patch it together.
Yeah, it's really hard to find a good reason not to be on Shopify unless there's purely a limitation from some fun custom functionality that you want to do that Shopify can't do, and Magento is the only solution, or Woo or whatever. Having worked with, and I'm sure you have as well, like working with all those platforms, like Magento particularly is just a beast and just so difficult to get things done. And Woo is just so much more maintenance in the background. Like it may be seeming cheaper up front, but what you got to do to maintain that and plugins and all those sort of issues. I never understand it if there's no reason not to be on Shopify and make things as simple as possible.
Yeah. And I mean, they keep just making updates to the product that are head and shoulders above anything else. I mean, the recent theme upgrades and what you're able to do is pretty remarkable. We have one client that has a lot of retail locations. They, you know, they have 10,000 plus SKUs. They're on BigCommerce. And, you know, they've asked us and we're like, honestly, it's maybe an incremental, you know, benefit, but the lift is going to be enormous, you know, to integrate Lightspeed, which is like the retail checkout and everything else with all the SKUs, get it all over. I mean, you're talking a long project in terms of time and a very expensive one. So we've actually, that's the one of the rare cases where like just stay on BigCommerce. There's not really enough of a benefit to justify moving over to Shopify.
You touched on the site speed, and that's such a critical thing. What are the key things that you're looking at implementing on a website to maximize that?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think a lot of times these big visual sites with a ton of images look really pretty. So one like super simple one is Lazy Load. It's an easy plugin that, you know, the images only load as you're scrolling down. So that can help increase site speed pretty significantly. Take a look at the scripts that are running on your site. You'd be amazed at how many still have like, they have like four different Facebook scripts. They have old loyalty, you know, kind of programs that they're running that still have scripts. That all has a negative impact. And then what we recommend is, you know, like for reviews, like Akendo is a great partner because they can load their, you know, kind of reviews in the CSS without impacting site speed whatsoever. And some of the other platforms can't do that. And so they do weigh it down a little bit. And it just becomes like pros, cons with that as well, of like the benefits of the user experience, but the impact that it's going to have, you know, kind of on, you know, site speed itself. And just like little things around just like compressed imagery, alt text, you know, kind of stuff like that is all, you know, incredibly important. And we're just fanatical about it because every second it's taking to load additionally, you're negatively impacting conversion by 10%, you know, for every second. So, you know, we're pretty relentless in focusing on that. We do a complete technology audit, script audit, imagery, like all that stuff, to kind of make recommendations to be able to address that.
A rumor I've always heard about Shopify is because they're the ones hosting it, you can't get any faster than 3 seconds load time unless you do like a headless commerce. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I tend to agree. And we are seeing headless come up quite a lot. I still think it's like early phase kind of like experimentation, but there's like we're a partner of Swell and Builder.io that are like headless solutions that I think do, you know, a pretty incredible job to address some of that. But again, what is your technology team, your dev team, to be able to, you know, kind of update that ongoing? 3 seconds is still really good for, you know, kind of a site, you know, to load. So we've seen some that are like 18, 20 seconds, but I think we usually say unless you have a really complex, like we recommend, it's a City Row. It's this, it's kind of like the Peloton version, but for rowing machines. They had on-demand classes. They had the physical equipment. They had, you know, subscription. Headless was able to allowing them to like really customize that experience and help, you know, kind of with the site and integrate it to the back end and the membership site. That made sense, but they had a CTO and had a product and a pretty significant dev team to be able to navigate that. Where, you know, if you're most brands, you just don't have the technology team to be able to meet the demands of headless and how much it's, you know, kind of constantly changing. So I think Shopify still gets you like 80, 90% of the way there, and introducing headless can be a little bit more of a headache than it's necessarily worth.
So you mentioned a bunch of different apps that you personally like to use. Would you say that you, what is like your recommended marketing stack or really tech stack when it comes to just a well-effective D2C site?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Shopify, like I said, and mostly just Shopify. We get a question a lot of like, do we need Shopify Plus or not? It's a very significant technology cost. Most of the time, I'd say just Shopify, you're good. We're huge advocates for Klaviyo, both on the email side and SMS. We've experimented with, you know, we have clients on Attentive and PostScript and, you know, some of these others, but I just personally like it all in one dashboard. And a lot of their updates have been very significant where, hey, we want to run this shopping cart abandonment. Let's try a split test, one email, one SMS, and see how it performs. That's like a click of the button. It's not where, you know, with these other platforms, you have to like manually upload the list sometimes, and it can just be a little bit more
sync it. Yeah, like we do the same. Like, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not fun. So Klaviyo for email, Klaviyo for SMS, Recharge for subscription management. Recharge SMS launched in June, July last year, which is really nice where it's like a press one to pause, press two to cancel. You know, it just makes it really easy to, you know, kind of manage it. And then Akendo, I mentioned for reviews. We've used a bunch of them, Stamped. They're all good, but I just like Akendo. It's like you can customize it really easily. Like I said, no impact with site speed. It has the deepest integration with Klaviyo. So you can actually pull the qualitative data from the reviews and use that as like a segment, like for Mudwater, you know, people that maybe give it a one star because they don't like the taste. We could run a campaign to like send them recipe recommendations or the creamer on us to try it with the creamer. So that's kind of cool. You know, for pop-up capture, sometimes Klaviyo scripts take a little while to load. So you could look at like a Just Do Know. We have started running experiments where you can customize that. Still has great integrations with Klaviyo, but again, a couple seconds for that pop-up to kind of take place can have a pretty dramatic impact on conversion. And then Smile for referrals and kind of loyalty, smile.io. What else? Anything else that kind of comes to mind? Like a Hotjar, Crazy Egg for heat map tracking, you know, kind of things of, you know, that nature. Don't sleep on Google. Like, you know, Google, you can build some really cool data dashboards and just data. I think like a glue.io, a lot of times for like a BI is like a little bit overkill for most of the brands that we're working, you know, kind of with. So, you know, having the dashboards, having the analytics, like everything, you know, kind of in place, Google Optimize for A/B testing and experimentation is great. So those are all like the most cost effective. And then for the shipping, the one that we talked about with Mudwater, the Malomo is really, really great. So it takes a lot of your transactional emails, order confirmations, shipping notification, and it just kind of like beautifies them, puts a really nice design to it. You can add videos, make it a little bit more interactive, feels more on brand than just getting the standard Shopify, you know, kind of, you know, transactional emails.
They seem to be one that get ignored a bit. It's just like they get sent out when there's so much opportunity because the open rate on those is going to be like 100%.
No, it's huge.
There's huge opportunity to maximize value in those emails.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an easy one. And they have shown like really, really helping with like average order value, you know, kind of, we see those emails, like it's usually in the top five, top 10 or top performing flows and additional revenue, you know, kind of driven. So yeah, I wouldn't sleep on that at all. And Malomo is a really easy tool that integrates with Klaviyo as well to be able to, you know, kind of handle that. But I'd say, you know, on the inverse, I see some brands that are maybe earlier stage, like they have them all. And I'm like, this is so overkill. Like, you know, they're just the technology cost alone, or they're just not getting the benefit, but they sign up for every single thing. Like, you know, ARPU and Live Recover and all these other ones. But they're spending thousands of dollars sometimes a month and, you know, really not reaping the benefits from it. So start small, keep adding as you go on, but you don't need like 10 or 15 technologies, because even just consolidating all that data can be a little bit of a nightmare.
Hmm. You mentioned Klaviyo a few times in here, which we're obviously huge fans of as well. Quick sidestep, what are your most effective strategies that you see maybe outside of the typical flows for maximizing your retention with DTC brands?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think because there's like the top five or seven flows that everybody should have. It's like welcome series, your shopping cart abandonment, browse abandonment, post-purchase flow, and customer win back. Like those usually, you know, kind of out of the gate, you always want to have, you know, be afraid to like have three emails in each flow, you know, as gentle reminders. We see that engagement doesn't really significantly, you know, drop off, you know, kind of from that, you know, kind of perspective. And then, you know, there's the customer win backs that I think a lot of people are, they put too far out. Like we see 90 days for the win back or the post purchase. Those are separate flows. So the customer win back, you can give it the 90 days. You can automate that. Klaviyo is really good about making your list being, you know, kind of clean and keeping the integrity of that. And so setting that up, the post purchase, like asking for the review, asking to subscribe, asking for another product, like is a huge, huge driver of revenue. I think people always think they're just like used car salesmen if they're just like asking for basic things, but we really haven't seen like a huge uptick in unsubscribes or anything like that. By just,
and they bought from you, right? Like they've kind of, they like you. So it's, I never understood, understand that one. Like, unless you're sending out something that's just obnoxious or annoying or whatever, then sure. But I mean, you're not emailing cold people. They're people that have shown an interest in your brand and probably really like your product.
Yeah.
I think it's out of ignorance too. Like I often tell brands that listen, like let data tell you if people are unsubscribing. Okay. Then maybe that's a good signal. But like if they're not, they're clicking, they're viewing, they're opening, there's still amount of a value exchange. So why not capitalize on it?
Yeah. No, I could agree with you. Sure. The post-purchase, I feel like, is one that's really, really underutilized. We touched on it. SMS, like just by adding it into their, you know, kind of messaging strategy and communication, we're seeing like increases of like 10% in their revenue, you know, kind of from email and SMS combined. So I think that's been really important. I think, you know, the kind of the darlings of the D2C world are like Olipop, you know, the beverage company, because they really focus on their customer service. Like they listen and I think they do that surprise and delight in a way that a lot of brands are struggling with. And, you know, it's Eli, who's, you know, one of the partners there. I think he's just done a remarkable job of really thinking about the customer experience and rewarding them when they are not expecting it. And so using CX to kind of help inform retention and really be understanding. Mudwater is a good example. Like we can pull out these VIPs that have been a fan of the product, purchasing the product for 2-3 years. Like what's exclusive content? What are, you know, additional gifts or thank yous? So we're doing some of that ideation, which is really fun. And it doesn't cost the brand that much. It just takes a little bit of time to think through in terms of like a strategy and stuff like that too.
I think a lot of brands still neglect that customer service part and how impactful it's probably the easiest way to maximize your retention and your LTV over time. Like perfect example, I went back, I think this was last year. Like I always bring my wife up because she's my case study with brands and shopping. But she received an email offering free shipping on something. And then she went to the website and it didn't work, or it had just run out or something like that. And then she's emailed them and they said, oh, look, that offer ended. There was no communication around it, whatnot. They didn't offer her the free shipping.
Yeah.
And she didn't make the purchase. But I know what happens with that, that she would find a product that she likes. She goes and talks to her mom. She goes and talks to her sisters. She goes and tells her friends. And after that experience, you like for not fulfilling on an offer, and I actually think the offer was still within the time frame specified in the comms or something, but there was a mistake in the comms, so they didn't honor it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They probably just lost like potentially thousands of dollars in lifetime value by not fulfill, like honoring something that was in their communication. And it's just those small little moments of opportunity to wow a customer that I think really get missed. And that can always start with a great product as well, right? Like if you've got a great product and you've got no returns, it gives you so much more flexibility to do those things. So, you know, again, going back to when I had my brand, I had very little returns on the towels. If there was any problem with the towel, I'd just let them keep that one and send them a new one.
Yeah.
And it's just those things, like how can you turn, you know, the challenge of any customer that comes to you that's had a bad experience, how can you potentially turn that into a positive experience to make them have the positive word of mouth effect you want?
Yeah, it's two things kind of come up as you're talking. One, I mean, you're seeing it now where Amazon's doing that with like refunds. I mean, they're just saying, even if it's a valid return, they're just like, they're keep it and you have to deal with it, because they've probably done, I know they've done the analysis on what it's costing them, you know, kind of around that. And so and that really dovetails into my second point, where we did have a brand, unfortunately, that just kind of hid behind COVID and, you know, the shipping was not communicated, and they're running into issues with their, you know, kind of suppliers and manufacturers, and they just kind of like put their, you know, head in the sand and we're just hoping for the best. I think I get it. I get the, you know, reasons why there's a lot coming at, but the next year they ramped up. They hired like 15 CS people, you know, CX people to, you know, kind of help on the customer service side. And, you know, we really advocate for like, hey, when they're checking out, be clear. Like, everybody is expecting the Amazon of like, I can buy something today and have it at my house 6 hours later. You know, we're not built like, you know, with the infrastructure of Amazon. So get ahead of it. If you can communicate, I think give people the benefit of the doubt. They can be more understanding. You always hear these like hellish customers, you know, kind of complaining, but for the most part, they understand you're a small brand. You're trying to figure these things out. If you can at least communicate on the front end, and then maybe it comes sooner, then it, you know, kind of really helps. So yeah, I think that surprise delight customer experience just gets neglected because it's like the soft touch thing that's a little bit harder to quantify.
Totally. And you mentioned it with the website, like removing friction. And my perspective on that was the same with the customer service. If a friction point, if I've got something and it's faulty, the fact that you, even if I can go and return it, no questions asked, it's still a hassle. It's a hassle for me to go and return it. Like, you're still creating a problem for me, and it's not a good experience. So obviously it depends on the value of the product and how many returns you're receiving and things like that. But if you can let them keep it and just ship them a new one, like, the positive experience in that is that's a wow experience. And that's, I think, where you get, it's the intangible though. Business owners can't see that or know exactly what it's going to do. Yeah. So I think it's that not being able to quantify it might be the tough part.
I equate it to like, it's the long-term thinking versus short-term thinking. They think about the short-term loss of revenue of shipping it back. And I also equate to brands that are afraid of giving offers, or not offers, I'm sorry, guarantees. Like, they're like, oh no, like, what if they call me back on the guarantee? Like, they've done studies, like 5% of people ever claim a guarantee. If you do the revenue conversion increase on what increased your conversion rate versus people that claim the guarantee, like, it's a freaking no-brainer if you do the math, but it's just that thinking, right? The short-term versus long-term.
Well, I think too, you want to try and get ahead of it. And this is where like, it's kind of fun with the CRO, especially as you guys mentioned with like fashion apparel. A lot of it's fit, you know, you can go in the retail shop and be able to try it on. It's very, very, you know, challenging to do that. And so what you want, we've done a lot around like sizing charts. There's even experimentation now with like, you know, augmented reality, where you can like not try it on yourself as necessarily, but really be able to look in, see the stitching, you know, kind of things like that, where you can kind of see it on a person. Having a lot of like great pictures, you know, talking about the size, like all that stuff can really help mitigate some of the, you know, kind of the returns that is going to be a loss leader, you know, kind of for you, you know, for most organizations. And so, and the product page, that's what Akendo is cool too, because they can customize the reviews based on, you know, a lot of different attributes. You know, it could be, hey, I'm this size, here's how it fit. You could kind of look at it based on the star rating, you know, oh, they give it a 1-star because of this, you could sort by that. So it helps it a little bit easier, I think, as people are, you know, going to, you know, kind of make that purchase. And you've done the hard work like to kind of get them there, but trying to think about, it might be more information that could have a negative impact on conversion, but that's why we do both, is because then we're also looking at lifetime value and things like that, and not just trying to acquire as many customers as possible if they're not the right types of customers too.
Just on that, because that's a really common, we work with a lot of fashion brands, and again, knowing how my wife shops and her friends and seeing how brands deal with it, they often have return rates of up to 20% because customers will buy 2 or 3 sizes to figure out which one fits best, or they'll buy 4 items, see which one they like most, and then ship 3 of them back.
Yeah.
How have you seen brands sort of factor that in? I mean, because the obvious solution is to try and provide as much information on the sizing before the purchase to give them an insight. But is that something that the you see brands having to factor into their margins, those return rates, or what are some of the strategies that you've seen that might impact that positively?
Yeah, the more information, the better. I think working closely with like sales, customer service to see like what are the common questions, like what we do with like kind of mud water of like why they're returning it, you know, so that we can start helping that kind of inform product. I'm very, very fortunate again, with my head of UX, she spent a decade like doing and running these experiments, you know, thousands of them. So she has just a lot of like experience where she can kind of look at things of like where they need to be, and just make it really easier. And on the product page, it's that balance of like putting so much information around like the sizing guide, the imagery, the reviews, like product details, but still doing it where it's like having it be, you know, kind of collapsible nav, making it easy to navigate where it's not overwhelming. So you have to be able to kind of like balance that. And I think if you look at your favorite brands, the brands that are doing hundreds of millions and revenue, like, you know, look, let's copy that. I'm sure they've done enough experimentation. They've kind of figured it out. Like, what is the layout on their product pages that we could apply, you know, to ourselves? And Shopify has the templates where it's pretty easy to, you know, be able to maneuver and, you know, kind of manipulate as well. But it's I don't think there's a golden, you know, kind of egg there. It's a challenge. It's always going to continue to be a challenge. And all you can do is try and mitigate it, but you know, you're still going to get 10-20%, I think, returns. But how can you just say even decrease that by a couple percentage points can make a big impact.
CRO side, again, coming back to the tools, there's so many platforms out there. What do you guys generally run with? Pros and cons of some, where do people start with choosing a platform that might be right for what they need?
I think, you know, if you're doing even as high as like 10 million a year, Google Optimize is going to get you there. I think it can, you know, do the majority of what you're looking for in terms of like testing and experimentation. Having a hot jar or like a crazy egg, pretty inexpensive to, you know, kind of put in place. Like, I mean, I personally, the reason why I'm in this business is I like totally nerd out on like the user recordings and seeing where the drop off is, where the challenges, and really diving into that data to help kind of inform some of these decisions. Those are like the two that are like super easy. As you progress and get a little bit more sophisticated, you know, we do look at Nosto, as like they do a little bit more like personalization on site so that they know if you've already made a purchase, they know if you've already kind of like logged in, they can kind of customize the product experience. So that's really, I think, valuable. And the more, yeah, friction you reduce, the more personalized you make it to their experiment, and their experience, then, you know, kind of the better. So that's, but it's still, you're talking 20-30 grand to kind of onboard something like that. It's not, you know, insignificant cost, but then, so that's one that we, you know, recommend for a lot of brands that are starting to kind of like mature. And then you get like the really comprehensive ones of, AB Tasty is a great kind of like multivariate experimentation on site that we see a lot of kind of like 50 million plus brands, you know, kind of using, you know, kind of there. And then, you know, you have Dynamic Yield that does a lot of like really cool personalization and things like that, and AB testing, you know, kind of as well. And then, you know, Optimizely, you know, as well. So I think for the most part, we're like, I think you can get there with Google Optimize and like a hot jar. And then that next step would be maybe like a Nosto or, you know, kind of an AB Tasty to just start running more like complex, you know, kind of experimentation.
Drew, last question on my side. Where would you recommend a brand even start with CRO as a strategy if this is their first time diving into it?
I mean, yeah, the internet these days, you can learn so much, you know, kind of so quickly. There's people that I, you know, definitely follow in terms of like newsletters. Matthias Schroeder is great. He's got like his own brand. So he's like running the experiments himself, and he's like a huge data like nerd geek, and he's like really thorough in terms of like, I ran this, and I, you know, he's the one that brought up the idea of like maybe putting thresholds around free shipping or not. And he's always experimenting. Nick Sharma, you know, I think does a really good job of thinking about like landing pages and combining that with, you know, kind of the paid efforts. Those are two that are a little bit more like CRO, you know, kind of focused. I have a newsletter. I'll plug myself, I guess, a little bit. It's like a weekly, we do like our experience. It's like a Tim Ferriss kind of five bullet. It takes like 30 seconds to read. It's like, here's the experiment we run. Here's the results. Here's a brand that we admire. Here's a tool that we're experimenting with. And then just because it's more educational for me, a podcast I'm listening to or a book that I'm reading that's a little bit more like business strategy. So we have a few thousand people subscribe to that, and I send that out kind of weekly. You just go to Consult PCR and subscribe there. And then honestly, like Klaviyo, AB Testy, a lot of these platforms, their blogs are chock full of resources that are really, really valuable too. So I think the newsletters and a little bit with like, you know, kind of the websites themselves is a great kind of like starter kit.
Yeah. For the smaller brands, because this is where I see the challenge, and I'd love your perspective on this, because there's obviously constraints with budget, traffic, when's the right time to look at a CRO agency? And you know, Ray touched on it earlier, and what situations is it worth overhauling versus having some ongoing testing? You know, if your traffic's not at a certain level, it's going to take a very long time to get the data you want, or you're only running single tests a month or something like that. Like for the smaller brands to say, you know, under 200K a month in revenue, what do you suggest in terms of how they approach it and getting started in this?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you have a little bit of development, like a Google Optimize, here's what I would do. I would kind of like educate yourself a little bit, you know, kind of read about, you know, some of these things. Like there are similar to like email, there's like the top performing flows. There's a lot of like low hanging fruit where more than likely you don't even have to run an experiment. Like as an experimenter, I hate kind of saying that, but if like you just don't have the resource going to dev, and like I can almost guarantee adding sticky add to cart for your mobile PDPs, like your product pages, is going to increase conversion. Like there's just, you know, kind of, you know, no doubt. Adding search and making it a little bit more prominent is going to have, you know, kind of a positive impact, you know, kind of on conversion. Adding, you know, kind of add to cart in reviews on your homepage as like, you know, kind of a collections page is going to have a positive impact. So, you know, doing some of those things, you kind of out of the gate, and you know, maybe that's first and foremost. Then you could start doing, once you've kind of like gone through that initial like surface level stuff that does help, then you could start looking at a Google Optimize and running some, you know, kind of more creative, you know, kind of experimentation, but don't get crazy with it. Like have it where it's like, let's experiment with like adding upsell and not. Like, what does that look like? And what is the impact? Like little things, you know, kind of changing buy now to, you know, shop, you know, today, or, you know, trying things with like calls to action to see what the impact of those things are. I think it's, we get engaged, you know, most CRO agencies, you need 30, 40,000 visitors, you know, kind of a month, with a decent AOV, so that if that 0.5% increase in conversion can justify a $5,000-$10,000 a month, you know, kind of retainer. We look at that. We run the calculations and we're like, oh wow, like
it's gonna make sense.
It's gonna be incremental. You know, it's kind of a net probably doesn't make sense. And we're pretty straightforward, you know, kind of with that. But there's not a lot of us out there, so it's like, you know, you hopefully, you know, I advocate for like the freelance kind of consultant hourly. Work with them first, then maybe upgrade a little bit to the, you know, kind of agency. And then obviously all the full service guys, you know, add CRO as a component, but I don't think they do near as good of a job because they don't focus just exclusively on that, you know, understandably.
Agreed. Yeah. And that's a reason why we've stayed out of that space for the most part from our side, just because one of us is going to have to really, really, really deep dive to I guess get the depth of understanding that we know that specialized people would have. Drew, thank you so much for jumping on, man. This has been an amazing chat. It's been great to discuss this side of running an e-com brand. I think it has been neglected, but I think it's going to be critical to everyone getting ROI back to where they wanted to be after probably a pretty tough year in 2021. Let's hope 2022 is a bit better. Let's wrap it up. Let everyone know where they can find you, and if they've got any questions or want to reach out, go for it.
Yeah, no, Scott Ray, like I said, I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's always fun to kind of geek out on these things and not have to be able to like dive into it a little bit deeper than I normally do. So I really appreciate the time. And yeah, I mean, pretty straightforward for me. You can obviously connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm usually pretty active, like, you know, kind of posting different, you know, kind of tips, articles, tools. And then, yeah, I have the weekly newsletter is like really the main two vehicles. Yeah, if you just go to consultpcr.com, there's a little pop-up to subscribe. And I do that weekly. It's maybe 2 minutes out of your day. We try and keep it, you know, kind of short, succinct, and of value. So, but those are, yeah, usually the two ways to, you know, kind of connect with me.
Awesome. I'm signing up.
Love it.
Appreciate your time, Drew. Thanks so much for joining us and stay tuned until next episode.
Amazing. Thanks, guys.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Growth and Greatness e-commerce podcast. I hope you got a ton of value out of this episode. And if you did, we'd love for you to leave us a review on your platform of choice and help us reach as many people as we can. Now, if you're a brand founder, an e-commerce entrepreneur, or an in-house marketing manager looking to accelerate your growth this year, then reach out to us at Right Hook Digital. We're a performance branding agency, and we specialize in partnering with e-commerce brands to help them hit their growth goals with maximum ROI. Now, if this sounds like a solution that you need, then check us out at righthookdigital.com and schedule a call with our client partnerships team. They'd love to have a chat with you and see how we can help you grow.